Hey, I'm just letting you know that in February 2023, I am speaking at my friend Andy Storch's event in Sonoma, California. It's called the Talent Development Think Tank. I'll be running a session on marketing your workshops. And on day three, I'll be hosting the 2-hour workshop blueprint session. I'd love to see you there. Head on over to leannehughes.com/think tank. Enjoy the episode. Coming up next on Leanne Hughes's Work and Live Large.
It kind of has three elements, and that's self-knowledge, self-goal setting, and self-regulation. So in order to create agency in your life and identify and accomplish meaningful goals, you need to somehow have a handle on those three elements. So I think for some people, the fact that they bang their head against walls is because they don't truly understand who they are and what they need, what is most important to them in life, and also how they can go about accomplishing those things.
Life's too short, so you're here to work and live large. Here's your host with nothing to lose, Leanne Hughes.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm your host, Leanne Hughes. Most recently on the show last week, we had 2x Tuesday, where I was sharing how you can thrive in the first 90 days of a role. I dissect that over a 2x2 matrix. This week, I've got a very cool interview with an all-round legend, someone who I just love going to lunch with. I love eating hot chips with her. That's an inside joke. And drinking champagne by the water. My guest today is Dr. Micah Nohouse, and she is a self-proclaimed self-leadership and flourishing fanatic. From a young age, she has been fascinated with the fact that some people seem to thrive in life while others get in their own way. And we talk about that in this episode. Micah studied psychology and did a doctorate specializing in behavior change techniques and learned what humans need in order to create a life of meaning and long-lasting happiness. I met Micah about 4 or 5 years ago when I was working internally in corporate, and I went to do an accreditation for a tool called Team Management Systems. It was in Brisbane, and I remember we were in class and Micah opened the door, walked in. She was wearing a leather jacket. She had a motorbike helmet. And then she was bantering with the trainers and really asking them to talk about the validity of their research. It was so cool. And I was like, who is this really cool person? And we kept in touch over email. And then Micah and her family moved to Europe. But since she's been back, we've been having conversations like the one that I'm sharing with you today. And it's one of my favorite things to do. Her approach to life certainly inspires me. And I'm sure as you listen in, you'll get some wonderful perspectives too on how you can live a full life. In today's conversation, we talk about the difference between surviving and thriving, how Micah woke up and realized that her own work wasn't fulfilling her, and what she decided to do next, how she took steps to change that. Something you'll notice with Micah as well is she'll talk about definitions related to things in this conversation related to burnout and languishing, but it's so important that we actually define what these things are before we move into asking questions and like labeling ourselves and our emotions. So I think that's really powerful. She also shares her self-leadership 2.0 model and the three key elements associated with that, and brings up a new phrase that I'd never heard before. So we've all heard of intrinsic and extrinsic motivation. And Micah shares something called integrated motivation. And the cool thing, this, like I said, this is a Work and Live Large podcast. What Micah and her family are doing, how they're traveling the world, learning, educating, and just growing their perspective, is something I just think is awesome. Of course, we'll wrap around at the end of the conversation and you'll hear what books, apps, and tools that Micah will recommend for you. To date, she has helped thousands of people build healthier and happier habits through her coaching and signature program, Fresh Start. Micah practices what she preaches by living on her own terms and traveling the world with her husband and 2 kids. You can find her work at drmicahnohouse.com. I'll put a link to that in the show notes, as well as following her on Instagram. She has a lot of cool lives and has a lot of updates on that. And of course, LinkedIn as well. She's also the co-founder of Decidium, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. I hope you love this episode. I hope you enjoy the conversation and learn and reflect on possibly what you could apply from this conversation to your own life. A link to everything is over at podcast.leannehughes.com. Enjoy the show. I'm so excited to welcome on to the Work and Live Large podcast my good friend, Dr. Micah Nohouse. Micah, it's great to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me, Leanne.
You've got a lot of interesting stories, but first, I mean, a lot of our listeners, they would have heard your bio, they would have heard me talk about how great you are, but in your own words, sort of what do you do now and what kind of watershed moments or pivots do you think in your life got you to where you are today?
Yeah. So I'm a psychologist by trade, and I specialize in human behavior change. And these days I focus a lot on self-leadership and flourishing. So I help people basically create more agency in their lives and make the decisions that truly matter to them. So identifying meaningful goals and then going about accomplishing them as well. So that's basically what I do. And the way I do it is through online programs, through coaching, consultancy with organizations, workshops, and so forth. So the how doesn't really matter so much, I don't think. In terms of pivotal moments, it's really interesting because, to be honest, I've always wanted to do this. I've always had this fascination with how come some people thrive in life? How come some people just go for every opportunity and accomplish their goals and they're just happy? And then from a young age, I've also observed people who seem to get in their own way and just bang their head against each wall and then complain about walls. And I always thought, what is it that these people have or do that the others don't? It's fascinated me. And it's what drove me to study psychology. But at the time, the science that really answers exactly those questions was only in its infancy. So positive psychology had only started at the time that I actually started my undergrad. So I kind of ended up working in those fields of psychology that applied all the knowledge we have about willpower, motivation, behavior change, and all the good things in a positive way. So not looking at what's wrong with people that psychology used to do and trying to get them back to, you know, from minus 10 to zero, but looking at how can we get people from zero to 10. So I worked in health behavior change. I worked in talent sort of management and those sorts of fields. But I suppose one of the pivotal moments I had that just wasn't really what I wanted to do was after a prolonged period of leave that I'd taken because one of our children was sick for a while. And I returned back to work after many months and I just realized how blasé I felt about the work I was doing. I thought it was just so meaningless. I was bored by it. I was left feeling cold about it. And I thought, why is that? Because I've always tried to follow exactly what I knew to do and to follow, you know, the right path for myself. And I remember I got so frustrated. So one day I came home from work and I was so happy at the time to be back at work and be back in a normal life. But I came home from work and I sat down with a paper and pen and I thought, scratch the past, start from fresh. What would I do if I were to go back to uni? Or how come I'm right here? What is it that fascinated me about studying psychology? Because I could answer this question very quickly. Totally would I study psychology again? Knowing about, you know, behavior change and motivation and those sorts of things were always exactly what I wanted to know. But I realized sort of as I was diving through the literature at the time then that what fascinated me the most, how do people become happy? How do they accomplish goals that truly matter to them? And how can they really create agency in their own life and maximize their own impact and potential? I realized that those were the questions that had only started to be answered basically at the time I was studying and after I left uni. And to this day, barely any universities in the world offer this subject to students, positive psychology. So I kind of ended up with a pen and paper, writing down everything that sort of fascinated me. I discovered the self-leadership literature. I kind of merged it all together and thought, this is basically a workshop that I want to be teaching other people for the rest of my life. This is what makes me feel alive. And I think this is sort of at the crux of creating happiness for people.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I've got so many things to reflect on as you were talking. The irony is that with all the tech tools available, the most powerful thing we can do is get a pen and a piece of paper and the space to just like write things down. The other thing, I saw a tweet, there was a Twitter thread I was following yesterday, and someone was talking about how they're seeing all these employees and executives burnt out. And as I was reading it, I was thinking, are they burnt out or are they, and in your words, blasé about what they're doing? And they don't have passion for it because that's what I was feeling when I was working internally. It's like, what is the point of doing like these PowerPoint decks and these things that don't even matter? And that was my version of burnout. What are you sensing? Like, I mean, there's an interesting time now with everything sort of shifting, the great resignation and all of that. Is burnout like blasé, being blasé in disguise? What's your take on burnout?
They are two very different things. So burnout will have its own criteria that kind of have to be met in order to qualify to being burnout. So I'm not, you know, working in that field. So I'm not an expert in that. And I can't tell you exactly what they are, but they are things like depersonalization. So becoming very cynical, also having a sense of not achieving anymore at work, and those sorts of things. And also obviously a huge perceived workload. So they are very, very different. Different to feeling blasé or blah or meh or languishing. So languishing is obviously the term, and you know, Adam Grant made it really popular, but it's a term that's been around actually for a while. And so maybe to give you a little bit more background about that is that let's talk about mental health. So until sort of a few years ago, we always assumed that mental health is when you don't have any mental illness. So, you know, you can imagine
that was the definition.
That was basically kind of what people assumed, right? And how we went about it. I mean, you go into organizations these days and it's like, you know, mental health is always talked about in a mental, from a mental illness kind of perspective. If you've got mental health issues, who do you see? A psychologist, but it's a clinical psychologist. So the way we imagine mental health is basically on a scale where you have mental illness on one side of the scale and you have no mental illness on the other side of the scale. And if you have a mental illness, you see a clinical psychologist, and hopefully by the time you finish with therapy, you don't have mental illness anymore. And someone would say, now you're mentally healthy. But it's far from it. In order to be completely mentally healthy, we need a lot more. And basically what we need is something called flourishing. And that's almost like, you know, just another dimension to this scale. And it's a scale on its own. They're related, but they're distinct. So you have flourishing on one end of the scale and you have languishing on the other end of the scale. So basically we can answer the question of what is languishing when we look at what is flourishing. And for flourishing, there are a few different models, but Corey Keyes is probably, I'm a big fan of his model because it's a lot more evidence-based than even Martin Seligman's PERMA model. And that is, we need emotional well-being, we need psychological well-being, and we need social well-being. So obviously these three terms are big on their own. So emotional well-being is things like a lot of positive affect in our lives. So, you know, lots of positive emotions, but we don't want to have that toxic, you know, positivity. But a low negative affect as well. But then also a little bit of almost like a cognitive evaluation of your life in total. So you're almost like your life satisfaction. If you think about your needs and your wants and you look at your life right now, what's the equation? Do you come out with some pluses at the end? And then psychological well-being goes a lot deeper. So it goes sort of beyond that cognitive evaluation. It also goes a little bit beyond hedonism. Looks more a little bit at sort of that eudaimonic type of happiness. So are you fulfilled? Do you perceive meaning in your life? So how about your accomplishments? Do you feel, you know, those sorts of things? And then social well-being, I think, is probably more intuitive, that you have a sense of being socially integrated, contributing to the community and to something greater than yourself. So those sorts of things. So we need those things in our lives. And, you know, self-actualization is a big one in the social, in the psychological well-being element. We need those things in our lives in order to be completely mentally healthy. Wow. So now we're talking a different language, right?
We are. And that's what I love about what you just did was that you defined very clearly what burnout was and all the different dimensions of like the differences. And I think the problem, is that we seem to just throw these words around thinking we know what definitions are. And then the diagnosis or whatever you do to like treat it or to progress is not correct. Because, the labeling in the first instance is incorrect.
Exactly.
There's something I was thinking about yesterday based on what you're talking about, purpose, right? So Simon Sinek's really popularized the whole why, you know, why are you doing what you do? And sometimes I think, is that really, I mean, there's some roles in the world and he's like, you know, you got to have purpose in the work that you do, but some people are just working to make ends meet and to support their family. That's the purpose. But in a lot of these sort of you know, if you do a lot of Simon Sinek work in organizations, like, well, why do you do what you do? And it gets really deep and people don't know how to answer that. And they're like, literally, I'm just here to make money for my family. What do you think about the whole why approach when it comes to the work that you do?
Absolutely. So we're talking about purpose and meaning. So purpose, I would always say, is sort of your meaning expressed in actions. It's sort of a means to an end to attain your sense of meaning. So meaning, we actually know there's a few things that we need in order to attain meaning. And one of them is the source. Only one component of meaning is the source. And your source for meaning is like an all-inclusive buffet. It can be anything. I mean, this can be work. And yes, for a lot of people, it's work, but it doesn't have to be. And if your job is just a way to earn enough money to live a great life and find your meaning in other ways, that's completely fine. You do not need to live your purpose through your job. I would definitely say that. And I remember a time in my life where that gave me peace of mind as well. For some people, it's family. For other people, it's hobbies. For some people, it's romantic relationships. It can be your passions. It can be religion is a big source of meaning for many, many people in this world. So the source of meaning is different for anyone. And obviously, it can be a combination of things. It doesn't have to be work.
Thank you so much for, because I was like really struggling over that yesterday, going, why are we forcing people to find like why in their work? And I love that you've brought in all these other elements, and that's sort of the purpose behind this. It's work, but it's living large in the way that you want to as well.
Yeah. And can I just compliment that as well? Because just to sort of give a full picture of the elements of meaning that we need. And the first one is it starts with you. You know, we all need to... All meaning is derived individually. What is meaningful for me is not meaningful for you necessarily. And so we really need to understand our values, our strengths. So those are the biggest probably factors for that part of meaning. And I think, you know, understanding your why, your values, that's your answer to your why, but it doesn't have to be expressed through work. And the other two are... connection. So a deep connection, first and foremost, sort of with yourself, but also with others. And then the last one is also kind of like a breadth of activities that we can express this through. So there's sort of different elements that we need in order to create meaning. We don't just find it, we kind of create it, right?
Yeah, that's great. And it was funny. You said, we all have different sense of what our meaning is. But I think you and I, Micah, would agree that it's traveling around the world, going on sailing boats, and like that would derive meaning from that, I think. Cool lunch locations. So there's some crossover there. What I wanted to pull up for you is when you said why you decided to study psychology, and you said the question that you were curious about is why some people are thriving and doing well, and why are others not, and you're finding excuses and bumping their head against walls. What is, I mean, that's a very complex question. It's why you're studying this, and it's, I imagine, a lifelong question for you. But like, what are some reasons? Like, what are you sensing? What is the difference between those two types of people?
That is a very big question. And I think the answer to that is just as complex as what we know about human behavior. And it looks different for everyone. So for some people, it's so let me just tell you a little bit about the self-leadership 2.0 model that I sort of created around this. So it kind of has three elements, and that's self-knowledge, self-goal setting, and self-regulation. So in order to create agency in your life and identify and accomplish meaningful goals, you need to somehow have a handle on those three elements. So I think for some people, the fact that they bang their head against walls is because they don't truly understand who they are and what they need, what is most important to them in life, and also how they can go about accomplishing those things. The second one, goal accomplishment, and you know this, you know, accomplishing goals can be so difficult for people. Sometimes it can be so easy and simple, and it can sort of seem like that, but there are many elements that really have to fall in place and align in order for us to achieve goals, because we're not intrinsically motivated for everything we want to achieve. In fact, most of the time, if you ask people about goals, there are lots of things that they despise doing that would get them to their end goal. So there are lots of elements included there, and many people don't know how to go about that, and that's completely normal. And then self-regulation is in and of itself completely packed with a lot of other things. So things like stress management, making good decisions. What else is self-regulation? Basically, it's the idea of influencing your own actions, thoughts, and feelings. So it's really, you know, so we have things like cognitive bias and not really knowing that we're influenced by our own cognitive bias in a way. So to give you just one example, cognitive dissonance is a huge phenomenon in people. So cognitive dissonance basically occurs when we take action that is not in line with what we believe about ourselves. So let's say I consider myself an eco-friendly person, and then I want to buy a new car, but it's not the eco-friendly one, let's just say. So now I'm in conflict with myself and it doesn't feel good, and we're highly driven to get rid of that conflict. So in this moment, we're having cognitive dissonance, and we will either change our beliefs about ourselves to get rid of that, saying, actually, I'm not really that eco-friendly, or we change, you know, the way we think about our behaviors or something like that. So cognitive dissonance, once you start paying attention to it, you can see it anywhere and everywhere. And so a lot of people, when they understand that there's a desire they have and a goal they would like to achieve, once they can sense that it might be really hard to attain that and they would have to change certain things in their behavior or say no to some comforting things in their lives, it's easiest for them to say, to change their own ambitions. It's almost like telling themselves stories. So we're starting to talk about procrastination, self-sabotage, those sorts of things, but they're very common.
It's so common, actually, because on the weekend, I think I was talking to you about like all these sessions coming up, and my problem is that, and this is my self-talk. Oh, that's okay, Leanne, you thrive off deadlines. You do really well creating things the day before something is about to start. And I thought, no, I can interrupt that story. And I'm looking ahead to next month and going, I can start today and I can break that story in my own head, but I've got to start collecting evidence and doing the work every day just to sort of bust that belief. But it's such a strong belief. And then I sort of buy into it because it's in my own self-interest to procrastinate and do what I want to do and relax and then go under insane pressure. But it's just a story I'm telling myself. It's not true. I can totally change it. And that's powerful. But you've got to pick it up. Otherwise, you just go on believing it.
Exactly. And and then it becomes a goal that you need to change that you don't really feel inclined to actually change sort of intrinsically, right?
Oh, totally. Then you think, oh, maybe I shouldn't do this because I put myself under intense stress. And then you think maybe I should career change. Like all of this, it's so funny. It starts at this like really small level and then you build up thinking maybe this isn't who I am. And I find it so fascinating, the work that you do.
And I love that you said that because when we're not, so most people know about the distinction between intrinsic motivation and extrinsic motivation, right? So intrinsic motivation, doing things for the heck of doing them because we enjoy doing that, and extrinsic motivation when someone tells us to do something that we don't really feel like doing, but then we sort of go and do it anyway. We can't really change that. That's very strongly tied to our personality, just to who we are. We can't expect to become intrinsically motivated for something that we're not really sort of born with. But there is a type of motivation. So in between those two are several layers or shades of gray. And one of the types of motivation that is most closely aligned with intrinsic motivation is called integrated motivation. And that is when we do things because they align with our values, and they also align very strongly with the concept we have about ourselves. So, you know, when we do things, for example, I consider myself a healthy and, let's say, hygienist person. And because of that, I brush my teeth twice a day. It's not necessarily something that, you know, I was born with a desire to brush my teeth. I don't know how many kids are when you think about, you know, teaching kids how to brush their teeth can be very tedious. But we do it anyway. There are so many things we do in our everyday life because of the way we perceive ourselves, because it aligns with our values and with our self-concept. And that is a very, very strong source of motivation we can and need to tap into if we want to maximize our motivation for something that we're not intrinsically motivated for.
Mm. And I think James Clear talks about this as well in Atomic Habits. Putting a vote. So every day you're doing an action that puts a vote in for the person you want to be. So if you want to be a writer, you just start writing every day and then you're collecting votes and then eventually you can say you're a writer. Running, for some reason, I can run marathons and I'm like, I'm still not a runner. Like, it's funny, some things you're just like, my concept of what that looks like is so different to what I believe myself to be. This is such a fascinating conversation. I've got a question for you, Mike, when it comes to like opportunities. And I think sometimes what you talk about is you've got the self-concept, but there might be something pushing you in a direction, but you might not feel like you're ready yet. Has there been a moment in your life or your career where you've said yes to an opportunity where you think, I just wasn't ready for that, but it was a great move?
Yeah, great question. And the thing was that there absolutely has been a time like that. And I can't unfortunately say that I said yes to something. In fact, I actually think often it's not what we say yes to, it's really what we say no to. And it's my experience with also many of the people I work with through that, many of my coaching clients, I feel like these days we have all these options and most of us are like stuck in a really great career. Most of us have great careers and a great lifestyle that we maintain through our careers and through our income as well. And so what becomes really tricky when we feel like we have an urge to change something and to live differently and live large in a way that maybe doesn't comply with society's standards is that we need to say no to something that and give up certainties and safeties that we've known for a very long time. So for me, and I suppose what I'm saying is I know a lot of women that are starting to have kids or that have kids and they also have an amazing career and they're starting to realize that, first of all, they feel guilt about not spending a lot of time with their kids and they want to spend more time with their kids. Or maybe they want to build a family. But also I think they're realizing that we're mid-age, surely there's more to life, and they have this sense of wanting to experience other things in life, you know, thinking, is this really it for the next 30 years until I retire? But they don't know how to break the cycle. They don't know how to get out of it because they would have to say no. And I think saying no is the biggest challenge we have. But we have to remind ourselves that every time we say, actually, that you just spoke about James Clear before, and there's this amazing quote of his where he says, when you say no, you're only saying no to one option. When you say yes, you are saying no to every other option. No is a decision. Yes is a responsibility. And I absolutely love that quote. So what happened for me was that about 3 years ago, we moved overseas. It was relatively spontaneous and it was through the job of my husband. And our idea was that once we were settled and once our kids were settled and back into school, I was going to apply for jobs and sort of continue my career over there. But as you know, that never happened because for other reasons, we had to look around for schools basically, and we really didn't like any of the schools. And we're not that fussy, but they were honestly like really 18th century and totally against what we value in terms of education for our children these days. And so we realized that we could register for homeschooling, and we did that just to buy time. And as time passed and we got into the whole homeschooling routine, and we just realized that our whole family was calming down so much. You know, my husband and I were both working full-time before. We were doing the Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. We were traveling for work a lot. We were single parenting when the other one was traveling. Our kids were going to school. They had the afternoon activities. It's basically the standard life for anyone living in Brisbane, Australia, or the Western world for so many people. And it's a hamster wheel.
It's so
getting
bad.
Out of that, it is mad. And many people try to get out of it. But it starts with building up the courage to say no. And obviously that decision was somewhat taken off me in that moment because we also disrupted ourselves. And at least I was brave enough to say no and quit my job over here and then say, I'm going to figure out the next step while we're over there, once we're settled. But that is exactly what it takes, the saying no to things. What are you willing to give? And I think we have a lot of fears around doing that because we fear regretting things. And to those people, I can only say, I'm a massive fan of end-of-life studies and looking to you know, things like Bronnie Ware's book, The Top Regrets of the Dying or The Five Regrets of the Dying, things like that. Because when people are on their deathbed, there are usually only ever like a handful of things they regret. And I just love looking towards that and going, do I really need to make the same mistakes when they are common to humanity? Do I really want to live my life the way I have been so far? And then I get to my own deathbed, and what are the chances that I'm going to have the same regrets? Mm-hmm. And I do not want to have those. And I think thinking about it from that perspective onto your own life, I think can help figure out those things.
I'm totally with you on that, Micah. That book, and also when anyone, say even Chris, my husband, sometimes he'll say, oh, when we retire, and I'm like, no, whatever you're about to say next, let's just do it now.
Yes.
Like, why? And so I'm a bit annoying, but I'm like, let's just do it now. I'm like, because I think particularly the retirement thing is, why are we going to wait till we're like 70 when we're like not even physically able? I mean, I don't know what we'll be like when we're 70, or even if we'll make it to 70, but like, how do you know? We have energy, we have vibrancy, we have the means to do it right now. Like, what is stopping us? And so what you just said before, sometimes like, because we don't have kids, but I'll go for a walk like past the school or something, and I see these exhausted parents dropping their kids off. I'll see them at after daycare, 6 p.m. picking them up, and I'm thinking, what have we created as a society? This is ridiculous. Like, people working so hard, like people having kids and not spending time with them. I know of sort of, it's really sad. And the fact that you then through your circumstances and self-disruption, well, like, we're not buying into this. What are some plans? Like, what are you thinking of doing? I know Brisbane isn't maybe your forever home. What are you thinking in future?
Yeah. Oh gosh. We always have plans. And I think we're also renowned for having crazy plans and also changing our plans. But it's also because we're a family unit of four. And it's actually funny you ask that question, because I think last weekend I actually called the whole family together. So we've been back in Brisbane for a year, and that's been super important to us, because before that, we spent 2 years in the south of France, which was amazing. But it was the first time we'd sort of taken the kids out of their, you know, their known life as well here in Australia, where everything is paradise and protected kind of thing. And so, you know, it was important for them to, they've been back to school, they've been back to obviously seeing their friends, and they know that home is still here and things don't really change much. And we realize we're ready for the next adventure. So I know, and actually we share this in the family, luckily, adventure is a huge value of mine. And again, we share this. So we've been having many chats about, well, how can we live adventure more, right? Living your values sort of and creating meaning. And traveling is a big one for us, and just living in different ways. So for us, we came together last weekend. We were like, okay, what are the different options we have? You know, do we want to get on a sailing boat and sail the world? And obviously this is like, you have to, you know, we have to be able to do it financially, and we don't have all the options available, but obviously depends on many things that are happening in the world, especially at the moment. But setting that aside, you know, do we want to travel around Australia and just do work experiences together with the kids, you know, hands-on staff, doing fruit picking, whatever, you know? So I think I asked all the family members to give a score out of 10 and vote for each option. And surprisingly, what we all ended up voting for the most is, or what we voted for the least, is status quo, staying here and doing the same normal protected life, just like, yes, party. And what we voted for the most was going, well, as a first stop to Southeast Asia on a one-way ticket and going traveling. So I think January, probably we're going to be leaving the country and doing that for a few months. We have like a little bit of a rough itinerary, but I've always wanted to travel freely. This is not something I've actually done, staying in one place, until I thought, now it's ready to move on. And how do we want to travel, and where do we want to travel to? So I would love to do that with them. Obviously, they still have to do homeschooling, and both my husband and I also work. We both work for ourselves, so it will be slow travel, but I love that idea more than anything anyway. And I think after that, it'll be a ticket to Germany to touch base with my family. This was a wish of the kids. They love it there, seeing, you know, my family and friends. And then we'll go from there.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you. Well, thanks for sharing that. I mean, that was a very recent event in your family. Now you're on a podcast talking about it. But I think I wanted to share like that side of you, because I think that really inspires people, that like, you know, you don't just talk about living your values. And you also said you created that, you carved at that time to have a family meeting to be intentional about planning it. So it's not like on a spontaneous whim, next week we're getting out. And then you figure out, right, well, if you and your husband have to work anywhere in the world, how can then you create the steps to do that when you are over in Asia? And I'll be very keen to visit you when you're over there for sure.
Yes.
Please document your trip as well.
Yeah.
We might move into the rapid rounds. I've got a few questions for you. Mm-hmm. Micah, what's a book that has shaped the way that you think?
That's a good one. And look, I'm a bit boring in that I read mostly nonfiction, but I think one of the absolute classics, and we've been talking about finding your why and your meaning and purpose, is Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning. Probably most of your listeners have read it more than once, but I just think it's one of my all-time favorites. Absolutely.
Yeah. I know. And you think anytime you feel like you're having a bad day in Brisbane, Australia in 2022, you reflect on that book and what this guy went through and how he still found meaning in the day-to-day. Like that, it's absolutely incredible. So yeah, we'll put a link to it. What is a favorite app or tool that you think we should all download right away?
I'm not your app person, so I would say do not download any more apps.
Okay. Say no to that.
Yeah, exactly. So I honestly think that it's more about your self-awareness, coming back to, you know, reflection and that sort of stuff, and also self-monitoring. I think even when we started with all the apps and with the smartwatches, and I thought, look, it's great if you're a person who's not very intuitive with yourself, don't have a lot of self-awareness in terms of when do you need to get up and move and those sorts of things. But I think the best thing you can do with yourself once, you know, this should be the training wheels. Once you're confident on your own, go out on your own and try to develop those senses for yourself. But
that's very good. Thank you. Because actually, I think on the weekend I was saying to you, I was holding my phone up and it was so heavy. I had all these like cards in this thing. But really recently, my hand has been just saying, my body's been saying to me, you're using your phone too much because it's getting a bit sore. So I need to just, I'll stop on that. But that's probably linked to your self-regulation piece.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. What is a song that gets you fired up or into state, like a productive emotional state?
Yeah, and look, productive emotional state. So when I work, you know, it's actually not a particular song. So there's some research behind white noise. So a little bit of white noise in the background is actually really good. And that doesn't actually have to be a song. But for me, anything really mellow that's in the background that I don't bump to, you know, is actually pieces that I don't know. And that's sort of the best for me to work with. In terms of probably getting a little bit more fired up in general, I love Nujabes. I don't know how many, you know, listeners are familiar with him. He used to be a Japanese record producer, DJ, something like that. Tragically, he died a few years ago. But he's amazing. Nujabes, any of his albums or songs, amazing.
How do you spell his name?
Nujabes.
Okay, fantastic. I'm going to cue that right up after this. And is there a favorite quote that you have that you'd like to share? I know you shared the James Clear quote.
Yeah, I think I already shared that one. And maybe another one that, again, summarizes a lot of the things that we spoke about would be by Corey Keyes. And he says, our approach to mental illness is insane. So he says mental illness, we spoke about mental health. Obviously, it means the same thing, but it is insane. And it really is. And I think now, especially coming out of the pandemic, a lot of people are realizing it.
It absolutely is insane. I love that quote because obviously it made me laugh because how he uses the word insanity in there.
Yeah.
But like you just think, like all this, all the attention and focus and support programs on it, and it's still not. It's still the mental health problem is only increasing. So the approach is wrong.
Yes.
And I love that you define like that there's two different scales. And like let's just stop shooting for the default of no mental health issue. Like let's go for flourishing and thriving, which is what you're all about.
Exactly.
If our listeners want to connect with you, find out more about self-leadership and the just amazing work that you do, and let's just say they love this conversation so much, they want to buy you a bottle of champagne, like where should we send them, Micah?
You can send them to my website, drmicahnias.com, which you'll probably have to spell out in the show notes, and or Instagram or LinkedIn is probably easiest for them to find me.
Amazing. Look, Micah, I always love chatting to you. We have like the best long lunches and conversations. This was only like a 5% teaser of the stuff that we talk about usually. Thank you so much for being here and sharing all of your incredible insight with our listeners.
Thank you so much. It's been such an honor to be on your show. Thanks, Leanne.
You're the best. Thank you so much for tuning in to Work and Live Large. I really appreciate you. If you know someone in your network and you think, oh my gosh, they've got so much potential, like I want them to live and work larger, send them this episode. I think they might appreciate it. I also appreciate hearing from you, your feedback, your thoughts, your questions, anything. You can shoot me an email, hello@leannehughes.com, or find me on LinkedIn, just search for Leanne Hughes. Stay up to date with all the episodes by heading on over to leannehughes.com/subscribe, and all the best with your week as you go around living it up.